VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
Thank you for joining us on Crosstalk today. A little different topic, but a very important topic that we're going to bring to your attention today, because marijuana use has been surging across the United States as more and more states have ushered in its legalization. I mean, there are in excess of 12,000 dispensaries across this nation, with only 11 states showing none. There was an article that appeared by, it was carried by U.S. News and World Report on May 22, 2024, indicating that more Americans now use marijuana each day than alcohol. That's referring to daily users. More daily users of the substance are using marijuana even over that of alcohol. In July of 2023, as published in the CDC's Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report, they analyzed nearly 540,000 cases nationwide where people under 25 years old wound up in a hospital due to complications from cannabis use. They reported that nearly 1 in 5 Americans over 12 years of age used cannabis in 2021. And despite all of this, the Biden administration's Department of Justice has submitted their notice of proposed rulemaking to the Office of Federal Register to reclassify marijuana as a less serious drug. Well, joining us today to speak to the issue of both what is called medicinal marijuana as well as recreational marijuana and its impact, we welcome to the program Dr. Eric Husar, who is a board-certified family medicine practicing physician in Marietta, Pennsylvania, graduating from Temple University, a Lewis Katz School of Medicine in 2002, and completed a residency at Lancaster General Hospital. He has enjoyed caring for patients from pre-birth all the way to 100 years of age for more than two decades. He is a Pennsylvania State Director of the American Academy of Medical Ethics. And Dr. Husar, thank you so much for joining us today.
Great to be here with you, Jim.
So just so we set a foundation, help us understand the terms like cannabis, marijuana. We also hear a term like THC coming out. Are all of these speaking of one and the same thing, or are they different?
So I think you want to look at it as an umbrella term. Cannabis is referring to the overall plant. And within the cannabis species, there are different types of plants that can come within that. And so, for instance, hemp is one of the types of plant that can come from cannabis or be part of the cannabis species, and that can be used in textiles and production of other materials that we use. But then a different variety of plant that is one of the cannabis plants can it contain, and this is where marijuana comes into play, differing levels of THC, tetrahydrocannabinol, and or CBD, cannabidiol. So cannabis is the overarching term. Hemp, THC, cannabidiol, CBD can all be part of that, but kind of different components of it.
And in like manner, we hear of marijuana plants as it being smoked, but we also learn of THC gummies and other edibles. So help us understand that concept there as well.
Absolutely. So they all are different ways of getting it into the body, and certainly the smoking or inhalation of it is the most rapid way of making it happen, and also potentially has likely the most side effects or potential concerns or harms, but it does not make the other forms of getting it in as meaning that they're safe or benign. There's certainly dangers associated with them too, but yes, so gummies, creams, lotions, gels, almost any way that you can get something into your body, you can get marijuana in there.
Okay, and let's talk about the potency then of marijuana and the THC contact. Is it universally the same, or does it vary?
There's lots of variation, and even thinking about marijuana over the years, you know, decades ago, when people were using marijuana, a lot of times the potency of THC would be somewhere in like the 4 to 5% range. In today's day and age, that number has increased sometimes by up to 10 to 30%, or 10 to 30 times as high. So there are times now where you can get marijuana with a THC concentration that's looking at 12%, 15%. Sometimes they're trying to concentrate the extracts of THC even as high as 40 or 70%, depending on where you get it.
And is that THC content, is that readily known by the user? I mean, do they buy the products knowing what percent it is?
Depends where you're getting it. And there are probably dispensaries where you could go and try to find out the specific concentration of THC and CBD that you would have in there. But certainly there are many people that are getting marijuana recreationally, potentially illegally in certain states, depending on what's what the state laws are. In many of those cases, they may have no idea how much actual marijuana how much THC is actually in the marijuana that they're receiving.
Let's talk about how this THC impacts the body. And I'm thinking specifically of how it impacts the brain. How does it impact our blood?
Right. So when somebody inhales THC in the marijuana plant, it very quickly, even within 30 seconds, it's in the bloodstream. It's activated by the heat. And as it goes into the capillaries, the blood vessels within the lungs, very quickly it will go into the bloodstream. THC is what we call lipophilic. It goes through fat cells very easily and fat layers easily, and so quickly gets in past what we call the blood-brain barrier. It's a way of keeping certain things outside of the brain. But unfortunately, THC gets in very quickly. And so THC is the most psychoactive form of the marijuana plant, and that can cause memory impairment. It can cause confusion, difficulties with attention or learning. And certainly, even though some people may use it for helping to treat anxiety or depression, in the long run, sometimes it can cause, even in the short term, paranoia or psychosis, but also with long term and regular use, it can lead to worsening levels of anxiety and depression.
My. Well, in the introduction that I gave, I spoke about the hundreds of thousands of cases of those under 25 who are entering the emergency department due to marijuana use, its effects. Is it true that those younger than age 25 are impacted differently from those that are older?
Yes. So it has a much higher risk in that population of leading to, number one, like the attention and memory issues and impairment. In fact, it can hit the prefrontal cortex in the adolescent mind. And even when I say adolescent, I don't just mean teenage years. The brain continues to develop up until age 25, and they can be impacted the most by use of marijuana. They also have some of the highest risk for other long-term psychiatric complications. But unfortunately, the use in this population is as high, if not higher, than adults that might use it, even though it's the least safe in that population.
Mm-hmm. We're talking today with Dr. Eric Husar, who is a board-certified family medicine physician practicing in Marietta, Pennsylvania. We're talking about marijuana's devastating impact and talking about young people and again, by those under the age of 25, you mentioned that brain is still developing. And I saw an article in the Daily Caller indicating that a study found teen marijuana use was tied to a dramatic increased risk of psychosis.
Correct. Yeah, they are the most susceptible to some of those either psychotic episodes or kind of mental health breakdowns, nervous breakdowns, some people might refer to them as. And unfortunately, this is the age group that probably is using the least amount of insight and judgment as to whether or not they should use it and the most susceptible to its side effects.
And what about suicide? Is that impacted by this?
There does seem to be, in the studies, a higher risk for suicidal ideation and carrying out suicidal plans as well. And I'm trying to remember off the top of my head, but I think about, in the long term, with regular use, like a 3 times higher risk of suicide in mm-hmm. those populations that use marijuana
so
regularly.
We talked about those under the age of 25 and how their brain is still in the developing pattern. What about those older than 25? Are there negative impacts that marijuana will have upon them?
Yeah, so while it's not as severe as how it might affect the younger population, as I alluded to earlier, long-term and regular use of marijuana can oftentimes worsen levels of anxiety and mm-hmm. depression. There does seem to be a lower employment rate, and so it can sometimes decrease motivation or initiative in starting to do things. It can decrease the likelihood of persisting in doing something once one has started. And certainly long-term use can also increase the risk of paranoia or psychosis in adults as well. Mm-hmm. And it's unfortunate because many times, at least for the patients that I see in my office, one of the primary reasons that many people use to marijuana is because they want to treat their anxiety. And in doing so, they're actually probably making their long-term anxiety levels worse.
Yeah, yeah. What is the addictive nature of marijuana, specifically then of that THC, the increased potency?
Correct. So when we think about a term like addiction, what's going on there is someone is using more and more of the same substance despite potential harm to themselves or others. And we have these endogenous or internal cannabinoid receptors, and we have cannabinoid molecules that are at work within our body that would, you know, fill these receptors and enact some of the same types of reactions that you might see with marijuana, but to a much lower degree. Unfortunately, when people start to use marijuana, it binds to these receptors with a much greater affinity or, you know, kind of magnetism, so to speak. But once you start to see these binds to the receptors don't respond the same way, and so you need more and more of the same drug to achieve the same response. And you can have increasing amounts of side effects and other complications as a result of getting to those higher and higher amounts. And so the addiction rate in adults who use regularly is about 1 in 9. In young people who use regularly, it's closer to 1 in 6.
Wow, wow. And I guess on that, you know, that vein as well, when we talk about, you know, as believers in Christ, and we know what Scripture says about our bodies being the temple of the Holy Spirit, should that not impact our decision whether or not to use this drug?
Absolutely. I think with anything we put into our body or put out of our body, whether, you know, thinking about exercise or other kind of healthy lifestyle activities, we want to think about how am I taking care of what God has given me. You know, ultimately, my body is not my own. It belongs to God. Mm-hmm. And I want to be a good steward of what he has given me. And the great news about this in the Christian world is that we know that God's design is for our best as well. So as we take good care of ourselves, we can also trust that that's going to be in our best interest. But yeah, so I think when we have a substance like this, number one, even if we don't know for sure or have any idea whether a substance is going to have a positive or negative impact on us, I think it would make sense in that case to be very cautious about what we put into our body. But in this situation where there is a significant amount of evidence about the potential dangers and toxicity of marijuana for us, it makes a lot of sense in the vast majority of cases to try to avoid it completely.
Yet some will say, "What, God's given us everything to enjoy, giving us all the plants of the field to enjoy. Why not this one?"
So God also allows poison ivy to flourish, and I don't typically try to ingest that because of its potential harms to my body.
Sure.
Opium or heroin, out of which heroin is developed, opium certainly grows naturally, as do those berries that our parents told us not to eat because they were dangerous for us. And so, yes, God made cannabis sativa, the marijuana plant, and it was good. We live in a broken world that is having a lot of consequences of that, and we can see some of the consequences and ways that this can affect us too.
Friends, we're going to take a quick break and come back with further discussion. We'll be getting into CBD oils. We'll be talking about some medicinal use of marijuana and other topics. Trust you'll stay with us today here on Crosstalk, coming your way from the VCY American Network.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist and author with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, are evolutionists still looking for the missing link?
Actually, Chris, missing links are everywhere in the fossil record. Now, evolutionists say that all animals came from a common ancestor. Yet these ancestors are missing, and the links between any two basic categories are missing. Missing links are still missing. Evolutionists used to admit that the missing links were a problem, but now they seem just to have stopped talking about them. They now propose the concept of punctuated equilibrium, which says that evolution went in spurts in the past. It went so fast that it left no transitional forms. I think the missing links will forever be missing because they never existed. God created each basic category as that category. They may have adapted to different conditions, but the basic categories got here separately. They were created back in Genesis.
For more on Genesis, visit us on the web at icr.org.
This is Crosstalk coming your way from the VCY American Network. Dr. Eric Husar is our guest today, board-certified family medicine physician out of Marietta, Pennsylvania, and talking about marijuana's devastating impact. And friends, it is on the grow. The devastating impact is growing across this nation as more and more states have seek to decriminalize it. And now we have a matter going on by the current administration and the Department of Justice that is seeking to reclassify marijuana, saying it's a less serious drug. Dr. Husar, how do you react to that when you hear it's a less serious drug?
Well, it's a complicated question. I think when you look at some of the other substances that are Category 1, same category as marijuana, you're looking at substances like heroin, like cocaine, and one could certainly make the argument that those have a much more high immediate risk to a patient or to a person. So someone could die with a one-time overdose of heroin, and we've seen the effects of that play out in our society for sure. Cocaine certainly can be extremely dangerous and could kill with a one-time use. Marijuana itself certainly does not have that same level of danger for sudden risk to people. However, because of it not causing such an acute or a sudden issue of risk, sometimes that makes people a little bit more at ease or think that, oh, this is reasonably safe or safe enough for me to start using. And I think it still has a much more significant long-term risk than what people chalk it up to. Now, on the other hand, there are some limited potential medicinal avenues that marijuana could be used, and we really haven't done a great job yet of proving what they are with good scientific evidence. Unfortunately, we can't really study something well while it's a Category 1. You can't design an ethical study that puts some people on a sugar pill and some people on marijuana or some people on cocaine or some people on heroin. And so the current administration is looking to try to declassify marijuana to a Schedule 3 as opposed to Schedule 1. I think there could be an argument for making it a lesser classification. My personal opinion would be it should be Schedule 2, which would put it in the same category as something like oxycodone or hydrocodone, still showing that it has a significant danger, but allowing for some more medical studies and scientific evidence to be developed at it to see if it has a certain niche within the medical world. And then once it has that niche, then we could push forward with looking at should there be FDA approval of marijuana and how should it be developed or delivered in those circumstances compared to what we're doing now, which is kind of congressional legislation saying we think this should be medically legal or we think it should be recreational legal. And I think that is fraught with all sorts of harm.
So let's talk more about the medicinal use, because we have states across this country that have said it is, you know, we're opening it up for, and they'll tell you, okay, you can have this many plants in your home, or you can do this or that, or you have to have this card, you can go to a dispensary and get it. But yet, I heard you say that this is not regulated by the FDA. So is there that great variance that we're seeing from state to state, and really from dispensary to dispensary, even what this medicinal use looks like?
Yes, I would say so. In states that have it approved for medicinal use, there is a extensive list of different things that you could use marijuana for. And if I'm remembering correctly, even in California, it would, you know, round out the list or put at the bottom medical indication for which the prescriber feels is necessary or important for the patient. So there's a very loose type of control on what it can be prescribed for. And when I say prescribed, I also say that very loosely. If I write for prescription medication that is FDA approved, and especially if it's a controlled substance, I'm writing for a person can take this amount of medication per day, this often per day. This is the number of tablets or pills that they can have in a month. This is the number of refills if it's a controlled 3, 4, or 5. Controlled 2 substances cannot have any refills and would need to be reordered either every month or every 3 months. However, with marijuana, when somebody gets medically certified to receive marijuana, there's once a year they have to get that redone. But otherwise, they can go to the dispensary, they can buy what they think they want or they need. There's very little restriction on that, and they can go back essentially as often as they would like to get more. And so you can imagine that makes it much more available for others to use that might not even be medically certified.
Mm-hmm. But there is no FDA approval in any state at this time.
Correct. It is not a federally approved substance, mm-hmm. and that's primarily because it's Schedule One. It cannot be studied the way that it would need to be in order to be FDA approved. And again, there could be a role for it to be reclassified to Schedule Two, and I think that would be the best. Mm-hmm. Jumping straight to a level three. There is some evidence that marijuana may help with chemotherapy-induced nausea and vomiting. So if someone's on treatment for cancer and has significant nausea and vomiting as a result of that, there's been evidence that cannabis or marijuana can be helpful for that. Some people do find some benefit for chronic pain. Others with multiple sclerosis may see a benefit in spasticity that's reported. But unfortunately, still, with the way that marijuana is developed and delivered, there's not nearly the regulation that there needs to be in order to make sure it happens in a safe manner.
And often we're told that when it is needed for chronic pain. Are there not other alternatives?
There are other alternatives. Pain is a difficult beast to deal with in that, you know, if you're looking at opiate medications with ARTS, which are FDA approved, someone could make a good argument that is marijuana potentially safer than some of those, and I could see where that argument would be coming from. And there may be some evidence of that, although people that are starting to use recreational or even potentially medical marijuana still have some evidence of opiate use or potentially overuse as well. Anti-inflammatories like Motrin, Advil, Aleve, or some of their prescription cousin drugs can be used, although they have a certain long list of side effects, too, that can affect people. And there's a number of alternative remedies as well that are used from time to time. But so, yes, there are approved pain treatments. They're not as effective as we would like for them to be, and certainly we wish we had safer long-term options that we can use, but marijuana certainly has its share of risks as well.
Mm-hmm. And also on this matter, we know that there's great variance between the states, some that have limited it to medicinal use, others for recreational use. In any regard, when a state begins this legalization process, doesn't the use of marijuana by young people in particular in that state escalate significantly as well?
It does. It just becomes more available. And you can imagine if someone is able to go to the dispensary and use their medical card to get marijuana, and there's not a significant restriction on how much they can get, certainly, in addition to them using it for themselves, they could fairly easily sell it to someone else or give it to someone else or pass it on elsewhere. And so, yeah, there does seem to be, you know, when states legalize it medically, there seems to be a higher likelihood that in the long run they will legalize it recreationally. It may not happen all the time, but it often does. And then certainly there's also a higher risk for illicit use in those states as well. It's interesting because many people thought, well, when we legalize it, the black market of marijuana will kind of drop out and that won't be as much of an issue, but that has not proven to be the case either. Certainly that's very much alive and active, even in the states where it is legal as well.
What propels that?
It may just be a way of trying to further, you know, some states that where it is recreational legal, maybe because it's legal, people aren't as worried about getting in trouble, and some folks would rather grow it on their own and sell it on their own without necessarily trying to go through the regulations or the way that it would be depicted to be regulated within that state itself.
Mm-hmm. Now, the other thing, and I mentioned this earlier too, was that the use of gummies, using gummies for putting in a level of THC, the marijuana, into it as well. I've seen too many stories, Doctor, of young children, toddlers. You think, oh, these are gummy bears, and consuming them and running into some severe medical issues.
Yeah, this is a really insidious thing that's going on here. And yes, they look like Sour Patch Kids or gummy bears, and we can certainly argue that sugar in and of itself is not a great thing to be giving to toddlers or children for their health, but you know, everybody knows that they'll get them as a treat periodically, but the way that the marijuana gummies are packaged, they're certainly packaged in a way to make them taste good to the users, because that's one of the ways that they're going to market them. But there's a high risk if children were to run into these, and there have been instances where children have been poisoned and intoxicated as a result of getting these without, you know, the adults maybe being aware of what was going on until they were needing to take them into the emergency room and getting further treatment. But yes, they have an appearance that looks a lot like other types of sugar-sweetened edibles that don't have marijuana, but unfortunately have a lot more complications and consequences to the central nervous system.
We talked about, you know, the levels of psychosis. We talked about certainly the increased, you know, rates or percent for suicide and so forth. But are there other social costs that are involved with the legalization and or the decriminalizing of marijuana?
Yes, I think I mentioned earlier sometimes unemployment can rise in people that would use regularly, or it may kind of take away one's motivation to either persist in a job or to look for work. The social costs also of just doing something in many cases that's illegal. And the other thing that we see is people that are using marijuana regularly still have a much higher risk for using other substances as well. And so even though marijuana itself is dangerous to many people and in many ways that it's used, it can also open people sometimes balk at it being a gateway drug, but it's actually not necessarily a wrong term. There are many people that start with marijuana and move their way along to other drugs that have a much higher social cost. Some people have promoted use of marijuana to say, like, this is going to even the playing field. It'll bring about more social justice. It'll protect, you know, underprivileged communities. But we kind of see the opposite happening, where those types of populations can even be at higher risk.
My. We're talking with Dr. Eric Husari today on Crosstalk on marijuana's devastating impact. And, Doctor, I'd like to also just bring up the matter of CBD oils and so forth. Those who are seeking out the use of CBD oils, we're talking a different thing here in some regard, but explain what a CBD oil is, and is there a level of safety in utilizing these oils?
So CBD is an interesting compound. As I mentioned earlier, CBD is short for cannabidiol, and it is part of the marijuana plant, usually found alongside of THC. Interestingly, when they're both in the substance that's ingested, the CBD can actually help protect against the psychoactive component of THC. And in some of the products of THC where they're meant to help people get high, for instance, the CBD amounts are lowered further to allow THC to do its work. But CBD does have some potential medicinal use, and it certainly does not seem to have the same psychoactive action that THC does. The hard part about CBD, whether it's an oil that someone might apply topically to an area or an oil that someone might ingest or another type of edible, is that it's still very poorly regulated. There are still potentially other side effects that can come about from using it, and there's just not good evidence of its overall safety. Now, if I had to choose between somebody going to use CBD versus THC to try to help with pain levels or to calm some anxiety levels, I would much rather have them use CBD, but it's still not something that I can confidently recommend because the evidence of its benefit is still so poor. And again, it may be a situation where if we can find a way to better classify these things with good scientific evidence and showing where it works and how it works and how it can be developed in a healthy way, it may have a medical role. But as of now, it's not felt to be something that we can confidently do that.
Friends, we're going to take a quick break and also open our phone lines here this afternoon to give you opportunity to speak with Dr. Eric Husari regarding marijuana. Our phone number to Crosstalk, 800-733-9829, 800-733-9829. This is Crosstalk coming your way from VCY America.
From the invention of writing, this world has been mostly ruled by kings. Power which concentrates into the hands of one person often rewards his friends, though, and punishes his enemies. The King of England was the most powerful king this planet had seen. So when Americans got the chance, they set up a government as far from a king as possible. A republic where the people are king, ruling through their representatives. How do republics rise and fall? How did 45 countries fall to communist dictators? Are these tactics used in America today? These and other issues are addressed in the book, Who is the King in America? By William Federer. This book provides the reader with an overview of 6,000 years of history and why America is unique. Discover the keys to preserving the freedoms of America's Republic. Who is the king in America? It's available for a donation of $18 or more. Ask for it when you call 1-800-729-9829. That's 1-800-729-9829.
We're tuned to Crosstalk on VCY America and talking about marijuana today with Dr. Eric Husar. And Doctor, you're connected with the Christian Medical and Dental Association, and I believe there's resources available for those who'd like to learn more information. Is that correct?
Absolutely. So the Christian Medical and Dental Association has a position statement on the use of medical marijuana, which would certainly address any concerns that are there around recreational marijuana as well. One of the physicians also who has done lots of work in this realm, and I would strongly recommend his book to you, is Dr. James Avery. And the book that he has written is called Marijuana, An Honest Look at the World's Most Misunderstood Weed. So Dr. James Avery has written an excellent resource on this that is, I think, helpful for both medical professionals, but also those that would not have any kind of medical training or experience.
And that website for the Christian Medical Association?
www.cmda.org. And if one would just put into your search engine of choice, CMDA position statement, marijuana, you could fairly easily come across the position statement that they've developed in regards to it.
Okay. And one other issue I'd like to hit before we take our first call, and that is expectant moms who are taking or utilizing marijuana in any of the forms we've talked about here today. You have some concerns, Doctor. Tell us about them.
Sure. In these places, in these states where marijuana is either medically or recreationally legal, or certainly in other places where it's still considered illicit or illegal, there's a significant percentage of pregnant women that are using marijuana to treat whether it is anxiety, depression, or pain issues, and unfortunately, marijuana can easily cross into past the placenta and get into the fetus, developing embryo, the preborn child. They have also these cannabinoid receptors, and there can be a significant impact negatively towards them as well, and we don't have good evidence as far as all the long-term harm, but I feel that this is a potential minefield of danger for unborn babies when their moms are using marijuana. And I would also say even breastfeeding moms, it can easily pass into breast milk and have a negative effect there as well. We talked about its potential danger for the developing brain in the 14 to 25-year-old, mm-hmm. but all the more so to be concerned about an infant or preborn child that is still extremely early in its development.
Well, we've got a number of people lined up here with questions for you, Doctor, so we'll come back to some other issues as we go along. But, well, let's go to the lines here. We have Tony calling from Neillsville, Wisconsin. And, Tony, you're on the air.
Hey, I'm glad to be the first caller. I'm not sure just exactly where to start with this because I was about 12 or 13 years old the first time I smoked it, and President Nixon was still in the White House yet. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't hit everybody the same. Some people can smoke it and not like it and walk away from it. It's harder on your lungs inhaling it than cigarette smoking is. And people used to put it in brownies and bake it to ingest it. And it did make you paranoid, thinking that the wrong people were always watching you.
Yeah.
And Cheech and Chong used to push this in the early 70s when they were big. And it is a gateway to other drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And, to me, personally, smoking marijuana was a lot easier. I quit smoking it in 89, and it wasn't always available then.
Yeah.
And alcohol and tobacco was much worse to kick because if you had money in your pocket, you could always get that. But before these dispensaries came up, marijuana was a touch-and-go type thing. Yeah. So,
Thank you, Tony. I'm going to have the doctor comment on a couple of things here. He talked about several things. Number one, he saw it. He was a user, started early in life, but did see it as being a gateway drug and talked about some of its impacts even upon the lungs itself.
Sure, yeah, and you can have chronic lung disease, chronic chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, which we can commonly see with cigarette use, that can certainly come about as a result of marijuana smoking as well.
Mm-hmm. And he talked about it being used in, like, in an ingredient in brownies?
Correct. Yeah, there are certainly people that will make brownies or other sweets or desserts and throw the marijuana in to try to enhance the experience. One of the potential dangers, too, with edibles would be that, you know, sometimes the effect doesn't kick in as quickly. And if someone's using an edible for a certain therapeutic effect with marijuana, they might think, oh, I'm not feeling anything yet. Let me eat more. And then by the time they start to feel the effect, they've really oversaturated their system with huge amounts of it. And so even though it takes longer to kick in, that's another potential danger of people taking it in orally.
Tony, thank you for your call. I know you have more to say, but we'll get other callers also lined up. Thank you for calling. Jeff is calling from Springfield, Missouri. And Jeff, hello, Jeff, you're on the air.
Yes. Hey, I just wanted to comment and say that, you know, I was a lifelong user of it, basically from my 20s through my 50s. I'm now looking at 60, but just wanted to comment that, you know, it's not good for you. People take it haphazardly. And for the youth, it's a horrible thing. It leads nowhere. It invites horrible decisions in your life. And to mention the sugar earlier, the doctor mentioned, you know, you might say, you hear people say they have the munchies. Well, it's horrible on a lot of people as far as their diet because it does give you insatiable appetites. And there's no good to it, nowhere. And my favorite preacher, Adrian Rogers, preaches on it and says that it's sorcery. When we take it and we use it, we invite sorcery into our minds and evil spirits. And it's a road to nowhere.
Yeah. Thank you, Jeff, for that testimonial in that regard. We, you know, talked about it being mind-altering, and it does impact decision-making, Doctor.
Yes, it can. And it can decrease someone's ability to process things clearly in their mind, to kind of regulate how they're ordering things. Some people try to use it to enhance their creativity, and in some ways it might enhance divergence of thought a little bit, but bringing those ideas back together into a final convergent thought of how do I organize that into something that's effective and helpful certainly is not in any way aided by marijuana and is actually hindered by it.
Friends, how many times do we see warnings in Scripture about being sober-minded? I mean, I think of even the admonition in 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 8, to be sober, be vigilant. Why? Because your adversary, the devil, as a roaring lion, walketh about seeking whom he may devour. And to have our a level mind and head in these days, Doctor, is critically important.
Yes, it is. And if we are using something and it's causing us to be under the influence where we can't make clear decisions or think clearly, that puts us at great risk for doing things that we would later regret. And even that state of mind itself is not something that God desires for us. Now, certainly there are times where people may need to be on medications to help severe pain that might cause them to feel a little woozy or tired. And I think ultimately looking at the motivation, praying about what we're doing, and asking for God's wisdom and guidance is very important. But at this point, I feel like that there's not nearly the evidence that we would need behind use of marijuana, except in extremely rare circumstances for which it might be indicated.
Robert is calling from Glendale. Robert, you're on the air.
Thank you very much, Jim. And, Doctor, thank you for coming on today and giving your professional opinion. As a brother to a brother, I want to commend you for that. my input is this. I smoked marijuana way back in the early 70s, and I know for a fact from just experiencing the people's reactions that were around me, it is not something human beings should be doing. It isn't a drug that is beneficial, except for now, way back there, they were using it for glaucoma in certain patients to aid in, I guess, the reduction of the blood vessels and things like that. But I do not promote it in any way, shape, or form, and wouldn't in any way, shape, or form ever think about doing it again, much less do it.
Robert, do you have a question for our guest?
ICR would be a good outlet of scientists to recruit in the backing of the negativity of marijuana. Mm-hmm. ICR Institute of
Creation Research.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Great. Thank you, Robert, for that. But another group on the medical side is certainly the Christian Medical and Dental Association, based out of, was it Bristol, Tennessee?
Correct.
Yeah. Great. Any comment about Robert, what he had to say?
No, I think it is interesting that you've now had several callers that have talked about their past use of it and look back with regret at the way it affected them. And
yeah.
Unfortunately, I think as people, many people try to justify the use. And to be fair, we know that not every substance affects people the same way.
Right.
There may be some who can use this and not experience the same types of consequences that others would. But again, the evidence of its safety is still, you know, so poor that we're looking at a lot of risks to anybody that would try it and especially use it on a regular basis.
Thank you for the call. Maxine is next in Prairie du Chien. You're on the air, Maxine.
Yes, thank you, Jim, and thank you to your guest. He already covered something that I was going to ask about, was the effect on the preborn. Mm. And I just want to testify that my own daughter lost her life at age 47. Mm. She was a big marijuana user, and she neglected her health. She was a severe diabetic, but marijuana played a big part in her poor health. I don't know if he touched on, like, truancy for children and neglect of children.
Okay.
And then also, what does the average marijuana cigarette cost?
Okay. Doctor, any responses there?
I don't have solid evidence to answer those questions specifically. I mean, I would certainly agree that I think levels of truancy would increase with regular marijuana use, and especially in the teenage population, and especially in those that may be, you know, able to transport themselves back and forth from school. I think there's going to be a lot more likelihood of them not attending like they should be.
Mm-hmm.
And it also would say, unfortunately, it has significant potential harms with driving, and we've seen some of that evidence, like coming out of Colorado, for instance, much higher fatality rate or traffic accident rate.
Yeah.
Since the advent of recreational marijuana approval. I cannot answer the cost of the marijuana cigarette, so I'm not sure what that number would be. But yeah, I think there's certainly, and to point out her comment about her daughter that lost her life, and I'm so sorry to hear that. This, I think, goes back to that point of saying some of the other drugs might be more likely to cause death in the very near term or immediately, potentially. But I think regular marijuana use still predisposes people to significant harm and potentially ending their lives in the longer term compared to the basic population.
Yeah, and Maxine, we're very sorry to hear about your daughter in that regard. Thank you for the call. And that does bring up another issue, Doctor, and that is how this THC interacts with other medications one may be taking as well.
Yeah, so, I mean, there are so many medications out there, and anytime I'm prescribing something, you know, my computer system is checking on what's the interaction of this drug with that drug, and it can send me alerts or precautions if there's something that I need to do differently with the dose. And unfortunately, you know, many times people aren't even reporting to their doctor that they're on marijuana, and for obvious reasons. Sometimes there is a stigma associated with it, or they don't want the doctor to recommend against it or to quote-unquote yell at them.
Mm-hmm.
And so many times a doctor may be prescribing a medication that could be interacting with the THC. And one of the potential major risks would be if a medication causes sedation or tiredness, and then you're already giving it to somebody who's using marijuana on the side.
Friends, we're up against another break. But again, the website is cmda.org. And even put in the search word of marijuana, you'll find more articles and issues pertaining to it, or marijuana position paper. We'll be back with more of your calls after the break. This is Crosstalk.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brennan House. Our website is worldviewtube.com. Well, election season is right around the corner, and it's a presidential election. So you know what that means, right? There must be a plandemic in the making. Well, in 2019, there was what was called Event 201. That was in October of 2019, planning for a coronavirus outbreak. And then it happened. Guess what? October 2nd through the 3rd in Washington, D.C., well, they're holding the International Bird Flu Summit. And among their topics, number one, session and breakout session number one, mass fatality management planning. Really? I did not know this until today. There was a 2006 movie about this that killed millions and millions and millions. And one of the governors dealing with it was a governor named Newsom. You can't make this up. Is this psychological projection? I'm Brandon House.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Dr. Eric Husar is our guest and talking about marijuana today on the program and taking your phone calls. Lots of interesting calls coming in from across the country today. We continue in Richland Center, Wisconsin. And Kevin, you're on the air.
Yeah, I'm 64 years old. You know, the whole party scene in the 70s and 80s, you see a lot of people, my friends, some were killed in motorcycle wrecks using it and stuff. But I have a question.
Yeah.
Was the death of the two boys that Susan Smith, her children, when she drowned them in North Carolina, was marijuana a suspect in her mental breakdown that led to her drowning her kids? And the whole social deal where she said her car was hijacked and they found out she had done it herself.
Okay. Any knowledge of that, Doctor?
I don't know enough specific details of the case to comment. I mean, and certainly when someone's under the influence of an intoxicant, it could have an impact of causing them to make decisions that they would not never otherwise have made. But I certainly don't have enough details to say that I think it was definitively related to it or contributor. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Kevin. Let's go to Lay in Bronx, New York. Lay, you're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon, guys. Thank you for taking my call. I stopped smoking weed 2 years ago, I would say, but it is said from what I'm seeing throughout New York right now, as they're opening a lot of smoke shop and a lot of chicken places, and I've seen kids smoking. And when I walk up to them, I ask them, like, are you 15 years old yet? Majority of them say yes. They try to like play it off, and instead, because I have no like weed, marijuana is like a gateway drug. Because I couldn't get high off of it, so I upgraded like to PCP, Angel Dust, and K2. Like it was crazy.
Yeah.
But I'm grateful now. I've been sober for 2 years, and I appreciate
great.
Like the fact that you guys talking about it, like to enlighten the youngsters that's coming up, because this is not supposed to happen. But at the end of the day, you cannot interfere with nobody's free will. They have to take their own part. They have to play their own role to know how to overcome it. So the Holy Spirit who lives in us, I specifically claim that power, because without the Holy Spirit, I wouldn't be able to be who I am today.
Amen.
So thank you for letting me share my first today. God bless.
God bless you guys. As well. Thank you, Lay, for your call. And I find it interesting, Doctor, you talked about, you know, he'd smoke more, but he had to do something more to achieve the high that he wanted to get. And so it led him to other drugs there.
Correct. And that's, as we were discussing earlier, you know, the effects of the THC on those internal cannabinoid receptors that we have is going to kind of wear off as far as how much it does for us or does for people that are using it. And so if someone cannot get the same high or supposed benefit out of the marijuana by itself, they can certainly turn to other things. I do want to say, too, I think it's very important for us to look at folks who are making these decisions to use and certainly view them with great compassion. I think it's easy to sometimes stand on one side and just condemn people for decisions that they've made, but we obviously know that there's hurting and there's brokenness and there's pain that leads to folks reaching out to these and kind of some kind of lifeboat to help them to stay afloat. And unfortunately, they're turning to something that I think is dangerous for them. But as we look at them, we want to come alongside in a way that is helpful and encouraging and loving and wanting to show the compassion that God has for them as well.
Yeah, to bear one another's burdens, so fulfill the law of Christ. I mean, Scripture tells us to do that. And I praise God, though, for the deliverance that the last caller had received from marijuana. Maurice is calling from New York as well. Maurice, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. It's a shame that Christians don't accept marijuana for what it is. I mean, it's basically was provided here by God. It is a natural medicine. It has many remedies. Natural remedies have been able to cure many ailments in many different ways where people have to resort to pharmaceutical. And, marijuana's been there to be able to replace that. I mean, some of the benefits of marijuana has been able to help in epilepsy, sleep disorder, anxiety, arthritis, multiple sclerosis, post-traumatic stress disorder, cancer, inflammatory bowel disease, glaucoma, inflammation. The list goes on and on.
Okay, Maurice.
I think that marijuana, like anything else, gets a bad rep.
Okay. Doctor, are you giving it a bad rep?
It has a limited number of areas in medicine where I think it is potentially beneficial. And as I mentioned earlier, some areas where it has some substantial evidence of benefit. The difficulty is that it has great potential harm as well. And, you know, he mentioned, for instance, anxiety. And yes, people use it to treat anxiety. But sometimes something that we use to treat something in the short term, such as in this case, can actually cause more long-term harm and danger to somebody. And, you know, his point is well made, too, that there are prescription medications that can also cause side effects and problems for people. And as a physician, when I see a patient, anytime I evaluate a treatment, I'm saying, what are the benefits of this versus the risks, given the evidence that we have? And I also want to have solid evidence if I'm going to recommend something.
Yeah.
And even though there is a long list of things that marijuana might help either temporarily or short term, there's still a lot, the vast majority of times where its dangers outweigh those potential benefits. Yeah.
Thank you, Maurice. We're going to squeeze in Bob, our final caller in Wisconsin. You're on the air, Bob.
I'm just so you know, I'm in total solidarity with the previous caller. I'm somebody that's been smoking for better than 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
I have a very productive business. I have paid for many kids to go to college. Our business has won awards nationally and internationally.
Mm-hmm.
I know very talented, very well educated, very productive people who are all smokers. I think it's like anything else. If you sit down and you have a beer with your cheeseburger or a couple of beers with your cheeseburger, you're okay. If you sit down and you drink a half a bottle of scotch with your cheeseburger, you're probably not okay.
Okay, Bob, we're down to 45 seconds. I want to give a doctor a chance to respond. Go ahead, doctor.
Well, and again, I think marijuana is not going to affect everyone the same way. And even though there are ways that people may be less likely to work or be employed, certainly there are going to be a lot of other folks that are very high functioning that use it. I would still say for the majority of those, I think that they would likely be doing even better than they are if they weren't using it. And as I mentioned earlier, there may be a select set of folks or conditions where in limited amounts, marijuana might be helpful. I just think we have not well defined what those are in a way that makes it safe to market it publicly, and especially as a medication.
We are out of time. Thank you, Bob, for the call. Out of time for the broadcast today. And Dr. Eric Husar has been our guest today. And folks, the website, cmda.org, cmda.org. That stands for the Christian Medical Dental Association. And Dr. Husar, thank you so much for being with us today.
It was great to be here, Jim. I appreciate your bringing this topic to light.
Great. If you can just stay on the line for just one moment, please. Friends, we thank you for joining us here today. A very important topic today, and trust that you'll prayerfully consider the things that have been shared here on the broadcast. God bless you, folks. Thanks for joining us on Crosstalk.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208, or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.